from the bottom of Chav Beis Amid Beis, four lines from the bottom. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Ein Masiyan Masuos, Ela Al HaChodesh, Shenira Bizmano Lekajo, Ve'ei Masai Masiyan Lo'ori Buro. The Gemara is commenting on the previous Mishnah, which discussed that they used to light torches to indicate that it was Rosh Chodesh, but the Gemara qualifies that they would only light torches on what we call a Chodesh Chaser, which basically means a 29-day month, or when you only have a one-day Rosh Chodesh. That's when they would light the torches, but not for a two-day Rosh Chodesh. Again, we'll see why in a second. And they would light them in the evening, basically, of that night. So in other words, they would only light the torches on that night of a one-day Rosh Chodesh. So the Gemara asks, Lememra diachaser avdinan amalelo avdinan maitaima. What's the logic behind this distinction? In other words, why is it that we only light the torches for a Chodesh Chaser, for a one-day Rosh Chodesh, but not for a two-day Rosh Chodesh? So the Gemara says, Amar Abzeira, Gzeira Mishrim Rosh Chodesh Chaser Shechalios Be'erev Shabbos. The reason why we only light the torches for a one-day Rosh Chodesh is as a Gzeira of, let's say you have a one-day Rosh Chodesh that falls on a Friday, which we actually have this coming week. This coming Friday is Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So the Gemara says, Emas Avdei Ba'afuke Shabbos. So obviously, you can't light the torches on Friday night because it's Shabbos, so you would be then stuck with lighting the torches on Motzai Shabbos. The problem is, De'i'amar Navi Nami Amalei, if you were going to insist that the torches also be lit for a Chodesh Malei, for a two-day Rosh Chodesh, so the Gemara says, Asu Limite, people would make the following mistake. Amrei, they would say, Hai Chaser, who really, this is a Chodesh Chaser, really, it's just a one-day Rosh Chodesh, V'hai Delo Avin Me'asmo Mishum Delo Efsher, and that which we didn't light the torches the previous night is because you couldn't light the torches on Shabbos. So people would basically get confused as to how many days of Rosh Chodesh there really were. O Dilma Malehu Uvizmano Avado, or they would say, no, maybe this is really a Chodesh Male, it's a two-day Rosh Chodesh, and in fact, you're lighting in the proper time. So the reason why we can't light these torches for a Chodesh Male, for a two-day Rosh Chodesh, is because it might lead to confusion in an event when you have a one-day Rosh Chodesh falling on a Friday, where if you light the torches on Motzei Shabbos, there's going to be some kind of ambiguity as to how many days of Rosh Chodesh there really are. So then the Gemara says, okay, but v'liyavad bein amalei bein achaser, v'chimikla Rosh Chodesh be'erev Shabbos lo liyavad klal, v'chevan delo avdinan Motzei Shabbos, v'avdinan amalei, made the yade the chaseru. The Gemara says, but there's a very simple way to rectify that potential confusion, which is just light the torch for every month, whether it's a one-day or two-day Rosh Chodesh, and the only time that you won't light a torch is when you have a one-day Rosh Chodesh that falls on a Friday. Now, how will that solve the problem? Because if you light the torch on Motzai Shabbos, then you know it's a two-day Rosh Chodesh. Because again, in this theoretical world, you're lighting torches for all months, whether it's a Chodesh Malei or a Chodesh Chaser. And if you don't light the torch on Motzai Shabbos, then you know it was only a one-day Rosh Chodesh. And the only reason why you didn't light the torches is just because it was Shabbos. So wouldn't that be a simple way to resolve this potential pitfall? So the Gemara says, no. Afilu hachi asu l'mitei, amrei hai malehu, v'hai delo avdei, isnusehu deisnuseh. The Gemara says, no, that one could still have potentially made the argument that this is a Chodesh Malei. This is really a two-day Rosh Chodesh. And the only reason why you didn't light the torches is for some extenuating circumstance. You didn't have access to fire or torches or whatever. So it could have been that there was some other reason, some external, some tangential reason that prevented you from lighting the torches. But again, there's still that potential of people getting confused as to how many days of Rosh Chodesh there are. So then I'm going to ask one final question. Why don't we only light torches for a two-day Rosh Chodesh, right? In other words, only for a Chodesh Mali and not for a Chodesh Chaser at all. So the Gemara says, no. Amar Avaye, Bishum Bitul Melacha La'am Shnei Yamim, because that can lead to 2 days of no Melacha, of no work for people. Now, it's a little bit unclear what exactly we're talking about here. According to Rashi, the case is Rosh Chodesh. Now, the question is, what do you mean? There's no Isser Melacha on Rosh Chodesh per se. So the truth is that that's kind of true. There maybe to a certain degree, this is more of a Megillah, Meseches Megillah topic, but the Rishonim and Meseches Megillah and Rashi a little bit here discusses how there were certain types of Melachos that certain people were Makabal on themselves to not do in Rosh Chodesh, especially women were Makabal to not do certain things. That could be one of the reasons why we read four Aliyos on Rosh Chodesh, because maybe people were not going to work at the same rate. Again, without getting into all the details about how that works, according to Rashi, the issue here is that if you're going to light torches for a Chodesh Mele, for a two-day Rosh Chodesh, you're going to lead to an extra day of no work. According to Tosfos, according to other Rishonim, this is just a Rosh Hashanah issue, not a general Rosh Chodesh issue. So this says, again, obviously, if it's Rosh Hashanah, then there's a real Isser Malacha involved. But again, the point is that if you end up lighting torches for 2 days, you could theoretically lead to this problem of people not working for 2 days, whether it's just Rosh Hashanah, whether it's Rosh Chodesh in general. That's kind of a technical machlokas. Okay, fine. Then the Mishnah said, Ketzad hayu masiyan masuos mevian klunzos. The Mishnah then went into very specific detail regarding the types of wood and the cedar that you were using to light, you know, in terms of lighting the torches. So the Gemara notes, Amar Rav Yehuda, Dalid Mine Arazim Hein. There's four types of cedar wood. Erez, Kasrom, Etz Shemen, Uverosh. So Erez is the standard term for cedar wood. Kasrom, the Gemara will define in a second. Etz Shemen is pine wood. And Verosh is some sort of a like a cypress tree, I believe. So the Gemara says, Kasrom, Amar Rav Adra, Devei Rabbi Shila, Amri Mavliga, Va'amrila Zogu. Again, they give different Aramaic terms for this type of wood. Ufliga de Rabba Baravuna. The Amar Rabba Baravuna Amre Berav. Asara Mine Arazim Hein. There's 10 types of cedar wood. Shene Emar. The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu. Etain Bamidbar Erez Shita Vahadas Ve'etz Shemen Asimbo Arava Beruch Tidhar Us Ashur Yachdav. The pasuk says that I'm going to place the cedar tree in the desert and the pine wood tree and the myrtle branch and the acacia tree, the myrtle tree, the pine wood tree, and I'm going to place the cypress tree and the larch tree, and all these different types of trees together were planted. So the Gemara now gives the Aramaic definitions for each of these types of wood. Erez is arza, shita is tornisa, hadas asa, etz shemen afarsima, berosh barta, tidhar shaga, ta'ashur shurivna. These are all the Aramaic terms for the types of trees and wood that we just mentioned in the pasuk. So the Gemara asks, hani shiva havu, they're only seven. The Gemara started out by saying that there were 10 types of wood. So the Gemara says, no, kiyasa rav dimi omar, hosifu aleim, alonim, almonim, almogin, Alonim butme, almonim balute, almogin ksisa. So in one version, the three trees that were added are called terebinth, oak, and coral. Ikada amre, aronim, armonim, almogin, aronim are, armonim dulve, almogin ksisa. And the other version is that it's a bay leaf tree and one was I think some kind of a pine tree and then a coral. So again, there's different versions about what the trees and what types of wood it was. But at the end of the Gemara, it comes out that there were 10 types of trees or 10 types of wood that were listed in the pasuk. Fine. Then the Gemara quotes another pasuk from Yeshayahu that says, "Vitzi adir lo yavrenu." That the Tzi Adir will not pass. What does that mean? Amarav, Zoborni Gedola refers to a large ship. So Hechi Avdu, Maisu Shis Alfe Gavre Betracer Yarche Shata, Va'amrila Tracer Alfe Gavre Beshita Yarche Shata. So either they took 12,000 people over 6 months or 6,000 people over 12 months. V'ta'ane L'chala Adishachna, they loaded up the boat with sand until it weighed down the boat, till the boat would start to sink. V'nachis Baram Orai, then a diver would jump off the boat. V'kater Atune Dekitna Bechsisa V'kater Lehu Besvinta. He would take this flax rope, tie one side of the rope to the coral that was under the water, and the other side he would tie to the boat. Then they would take the sand and throw it off the boat. And as the boat started to lift up, because it would get lighter from throwing the sand off, it would uproot the coral, because they wanted to basically harvest the coral from under the ocean. But the coral was so valuable that it was worth twice the weight of silver. There were three ports. Two were Roman, one was Persian. The Roman ports, they used to harvest the coral. And the Persian ones, they would go, you know, searching for gems, jewels, pearls, whatever it was, and they used to call these places the royal ports. So Hashem basically is going to return all of the acacia trees that were taken by the non-Jews from Yerushalayim, and when they wanted to use their wood for some healing properties or whatever it was, Hashem promises to return those trees back to Yerushalayim in the future. So the Gemara now quotes two versions. In the first version, if you learn Torah but don't teach it, then you're like a myrtle branch in the desert, which basically means that you're useless because you're not imparting, you're not sharing your wisdom with anyone. You're just like a beautiful, nice smelling plant that's out in the desert that no one's going to access. In the other version of the Gemara, if you teach Torah to a place where there are no Talmidei Chachamim, so then it's actually a good thing. You're like a myrtle in the desert in that it's chaviv, in that it's precious, it's dear, because it's almost like an anomaly. Woe to the non-Jews that they have no rectification. Specifically, we're talking about, as we'll see in a second, the non-Jews who were engaged in killing the Talmidei Chachamim during the Asara Haruge Malchus. The Pesuk says in Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu, Tachas HaNechoshes Avi Zahav, Vesachas HaBarzel Avi Chesef, Vesachas HaYitzim Nechoshes, Vesachas HaAvanim Barzel, Tachas Rabbi Akiva V'Chaver of Mayim Mevien. So in other words, the Pasuk says that you can replace copper with gold and iron with silver, and you know, all these things can be replaced, but the Gemara says, what are you going to replace Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues who were killed as part of the Asara Harugim Malchus with? What are you going to replace them? And the Gemara says, Va'aleim Omer V'Nikesi Damam Lo Nikesi, the famous Pasuk from Sefer Yoel that we say in Avaracham Imre and Shacharis and Shabbos, V'Nikesi Damam Lo Nikesi, those people who were killed, so they're going to be avenged, and in other words, the people who killed them, in this case the non-Jews, the Romans, are not going to be acquitted. Okay, then the Mishnah said, Umeayin Hayu Masi and Masuos Umi Beis Bilton. The Mishnah rattled off several places, four places, from where that ranged, where these torches were lit. So the Gemara asks, my Beis Bilton? Amar Rav Zo Beiram, that's the city of Beiram in Eretz Yisrael. My Gola? Amar Rav Yosef Zo Pumpedisa. And the Mishnah said that they used to light the torches so that people in Golos could see it. Now obviously it's not referring to the entire diaspora, it's not possible that every single person in Chutz La'aretz can see it, but it refers specifically to the city of Pumpedisa. My Kimedura Sa'esh? Tana Kol Echad V'yecha Nota Lavuka Biyado V'Ola L'Rosh Gago. Each person would take a torch and they would go up to their roof and they would light the torch on top of their roof so that everyone would know that it was Rosh Chodesh. Tanya Reb Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Afcharim v'chayer v'gader v'chavrosa. Those other cities, those three cities, plus their outlying, plus the outskirts, the surrounding cities, would also light the torches to indicate that it was Rosh Chodesh. So the Gemara says, Ika da'amre b'nei u'v'nei havu kaimei. So one version of the Gemara says that those three cities that the Gemara just mentioned were in between the four cities that were listed in the Mishnah. Ika da'amre l'hach gisa de'eretz Yisrael havu kaimei. The other version is that those cities were on the opposite end of Eretz Yisrael. Mar chashiv d'hai gisa u'mar chashiv d'hai gisa. It's just that the time of the Mishnah lists the cities on one side of Eretz Yisrael, and the Braisa lists the cities on the other side. But in other words, the point is that all of the cities on the borders, on the surrounding borders of Eretz Yisrael, would light the torches. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bein kol achas v'achas shmona parsos. There was a distance of 8 parsos between each of the four cities that are listed in the Mishnah. So kama havaluhu tlas in v'sartin. That means that again, there are four cities, so there's a total of 32 parsos between the four cities. So the Gemara asks, v'haha idna tuva havu. But today we know that the distance from Beis Bilton to Har HaZisim, which are the two extreme cities that are listed in the Mishnah, is much further than 32 parsaos. So the Gemara says, no, Amar Abai istatume istatum lehu darchei, dechsev lochein hinen isaches darkeich basirim, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar Mehacha, dechsev nesivo sai iva. In other words, technically, it should be just a total of 32 parsaos, but because there were certain impediments put in the way and certain roads were blocked off, it ended up taking a lot longer because they had to take these, you know, longer, more circuitous routes to get from one place to the other. So it ended up being that the distance was actually a lot longer. Fine. Says the Mishnah, Chatzer Gedola Haisa B'Yerushalayim Uves Yazek Haisa Nikris. There was a large courtyard in Yerushalayim known as Beis Yazek. Ulesham Kol Ha'idim Miskansen. That's where all the witnesses would gather to testify about the new moon. Ubezdin Bodkin Osam Sham. Bezdin would investigate, would inspect them there. Usudos Gedolos Osin Lehem B'Shul Shiyuhu Regilin Lavo. And they would make these large feasts, in other words, in order to encourage the witnesses to come. Barishona Lo Hayu Zazin Misham Kol Hayom. So initially, if the witnesses came on Shabbos, they refuse to let them leave because there's no heter for them. In other words, there's a heter for them to come on Shabbos to say that it's Rosh Chodesh, but presumably, says the Mishnah, there's no reason, there's no heter to let them leave on Shabbos. However, the Mishnah says, Hiskin Rabban Gamliel Hazakin Sheyuhu Mehalchen Alpayim Amalucho Ruach. Rabban Gamliel basically said that we can let them walk 2,000 amos in each direction because otherwise no one's going to ever want to come to testify on Shabbos as Rosh Chodesh if they know that they're stuck there for the rest of Shabbos. V'lo Eilu Bilvad, and not only is this case of the Edim, are these people allowed to walk 2,000 amos, Ela achachama haba li alid, vahabala hatsa min hadliko, min hagayasu min hanar, umin amapoles, hareilu ka'an she'ayir ve'ishlam apayim l'chol ruach. Let's say you have a midwife who was called in to help deliver a baby on Shabbos, or someone who's saving someone's life from a fire, from an incoming army, from a river, from a building collapsing, all these cases, they take on the status of the people of the city, and they're given the regular 2,000 amos of a tchum that anyone else in the city is given when Shabbos begins. So the Gemara asks, Iboy aluhu, bis yazik tanan, o bis yazik tanan. Bis yazik tanan, lishna ma'al yuhu dechsev vai azikehu vai sakulehu, o dilma bis yazik tanan, lishna detzarehu, ki dechsev hu asur ba azikim. The question is, when the Mishnah talks about that name of the courtyard, bis yazik, Is that a positive or a negative connotation? So Ya'azik with an ayin has a positive connotation. The Gemara references the pasuk from Sefer Yeshayahu, Vayazikehu Vayisakelehu. They cleared away the rocks. It basically implies a lashon of improvement. They improved the area. So on the one hand, you can argue that it was a good place. They had feasts. They had incentives to help the witnesses come. On the other hand, you can argue that Beis Yazik has this negative connotation, which is the pasuk from Yirmiyahu, which is talking about how Nebuzaradan and Nebuchadnezzar basically took everyone, you know, into Galus, and it says that he was bound up in chains, ba'azikim, so Yazik could have that connotation, because again, as we said, Me'ikradim, before this later takan of Rabban Gamliel Hazakin, they were kind of stuck there. They weren't allowed to leave the courtyard if they came on Shabbos. So Amar Abaye Tashma, Sugos Gedolos Ayosin Lahem Sham, Kadesh Yurigin Lavo. So didn't we say in the mission that they used to throw these large feasts to encourage Aiden to come? Doesn't that imply that it's a good thing, and therefore the name should be based Ya'azik with an ayin that has a positive connotation? To which the Gemara says, no, Dilmatarte Havu Avdebuhu. It could be both. It could be they threw great feasts, but they were also stuck there. So it could be both positive and negative at the same time. Okay. Says the Mishnah, Ketzad Bodkin Esa Edim. How would they investigate the Edim? Zug Shebar Rishon Bodkin Osa Rishon. So the first group that of Edim that would come, they would be the first ones to be investigated. Umachnisen Esa Gadol Shebah. And they would bring in the most prominent or the most, you know, the greatest of the group first. Va'omrlo. And they would say to him, Emor, Ketzad Ra'isa Esa Levana. They would ask for specifics about the positioning of the moon, right? They would say, Lifnei Hachama Ola'achar Hachama. Litzfona Olidroma. Did you see the moon before or before the sun or behind the sun? Was it to the north of the sun or to the south? Kamahaya Gavo, how high in the sky was it? Ulaihaya Nota, which direction was it positioned? The Kamahaya Rachav, how wide did it look? Imamar Lifne Hachamalo Amar Klum. If the witnesses say that the moon was in front of the sun, that's a meaningless thing. Again, the Gemara is going to clarify all of these things. So then they would bring in the second guy, and they would investigate him. Im nimtzu divrei mechuvan medusan kayames, and if it turns out that the two witnesses' words aligned, then you know that was it. Then they said it was Rosh Chodesh, and they declared Rosh Chodesh. U'sha'ar kol hazugos sholin oso osan rashi devarim, and then for all the rest of the witnesses who came, so they weren't just going to leave them. There were, like, let's say, hundreds of witnesses who came to testify. So once they already got confirmation from one set, they would just kind of ask the other witnesses, you know, kind of general questions, rashi devarim, just kind of, you know, more general questions. Lo she'u. They didn't want to discourage them from coming in the future. So if they just kicked everybody else out without even asking them a question, they would feel bad, they would feel dejected. So as a kind of a courtesy for them making the trip here, they just kind of asked them general questions so that this way they would encourage them to come in the future. Fine. So the Gemara asks, Hainu lifnei achama, hainu litzfona, hainu liachar achama, hainu lidroma. The first two questions that they asked the witnesses seem to be the same question, right? The question of, is the moon in front of or behind the sun, and is the moon to the north or the south of the sun, seemingly, are the same question. So what was being added in that second question? So says the Gemara, no. Amar Abaye, Pigi Masa Lifnei Hachama, Oli Achar Hachama. The real question was, the first question was not about the general positioning of the moon, but rather specifically regarding the concave side of the moon. Was the concave side of the moon facing the sun, or was it behind the sun? Im Amar Lifnei Hachama, Lo Amar Klum. If the witnesses said that the concave side of the moon was in front of the sun, that's a meaningless statement. How do we know that? To Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the pasuk from Iov, that there is dominion and fear are with God, and he makes peace in the heavens. So the Gemara says, Hashem made it in such a way that the sun would never be exposed to the concave side of a moon or of the rainbow. This is the famous Gemara about how Hashem shrunk the moon, right? Because the moon complained. So basically, Hashem made it in such a way that the concave side of the moon would face away from the sun, so as quote unquote the moon shouldn't feel bad. So if witnesses are saying that the concave side of the moon is facing the sun, they're either lying or they're just wrong or they're ignorant or whatever it is. So that's how you know that their testimony is incorrect. And then just kind of tangentially, the Gemara says, "Piki masa shel keshes tilolim ruv de'achama geiri kamishadya." Why is the concave side of a rainbow facing away from the sun? The Gemara gives kind of a very strange idea, which is that we don't want to encourage sun worshippers, because if they look at the rainbow, because the rainbow has the shape of like a bow, so people might think that the sun is ki'ilu holding the rainbow like a sling, like a bow and arrow, and shooting arrows at those people who don't believe in the sun. So in order that people don't think that, Hashem inverted the rainbow so that the convex side of the rainbow faces the sun as opposed to the concave side.